Welcome to Covered, a conversation about books with the people who write them. I'm your host, Harry Marks, and today's guest is Brighton Walsh. Brighton is the author of the new adult novel, Caged in Winter, and it's out now from the Berkeley Publishing Group. Brighton, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about Caged in Winter?
Okay. Caged in Winter is a new adult book, like you mentioned, with an aspiring hero chef. And the heroine is a little bit headstrong and stubborn and sort of closed off emotionally. So the book deals with a lot of push and pull between them. A lot of internal angst, I guess you could say.
And would you be able to read a little from the book?
Oh, sure. Okay. This is a little ways into the book after Kate has sort of been pursuing Winter and she is pushing back a little bit. And this is where she finally gives in just a little bit. This is from Winter's point of view. A slow smile spreads across his face, his eyes dancing. There's nothing sweet about his expression. It's the look of a predator capturing his prey. And as much as the idea rankles me, I can't ignore the flare of excitement that grows low in my belly, the awareness that he makes me feel in my body. Everything about him is larger than life, his size most notably, but there are other things I didn't pick up on before when the only illumination we had was the moon and passing street lamps. But here, under the harsh track lights of the bus, everything is accentuated. He's imposing, even sitting here, his back curled as he leans toward me. His face looks like it was carved from stone, the angles of his jaw and cheekbones sharp and unforgiving. I feel like his shoulders are twice the width of mine, at least, though I know that's not possible. Probably. His arms are massive, roped with muscle, and completely covered in ink. I'd seen hits of tattoos before, pieces here and there, but this is more than I anticipated. Designs cover both forearms, disappearing into the short sleeves of his shirt wrapped tightly around the bulk of his biceps, tiny whispers peeking out of the neckline. I wonder where they stop, if they stop. I guess it's my lucky day then. And his voice, low and deep and rumbly and so perfectly matched to the rest of him. I glance down once again at the name he's had permanently etched on him. The idea that someone, a girl, means enough to him to have her name forever branded into his skin is foreign to me. I can't imagine that kind of love, that kind of commitment. Not after the examples I've had in my life. The low hum of disappointment in my stomach at him being taken is a completely unwelcome sensation. Meeting his eyes, I recall what he said and ask, "Why is that?" He stares at me for a beat, his smile growing even more until his entire face lights up with it. "You just agreed to dinner." I sit back in my seat, brow furrowed. No, I didn't. What I said was, "I don't do committed guys." "Right." And then you said, "Too bad. I was going to say yes. And you should know this." He runs a finger over the flowing letters that make up the girl's name on his arm. "Is my niece, not my girlfriend. That," he points to the date, "her birthday, not an anniversary." I open my mouth to say something, anything, but nothing comes out. And then his hand is under my chin, coaxing my jaw up until my lips are no longer parted. With a single finger, he makes a path down the side of my neck, over my shoulder, down my arm to my wrist before he grabs my hand, and I swear to God I'm on fire. Every nerve ending in my body is setting off a code red alarm, and I'm helpless to stop it. His thumb rubs back and forth on the inside of my wrist, his touch gentle and reverent, and I can't remember the last time someone's touched me so sweetly. And I realize with clarity it's because I've never been touched this way. When I meet his eyes again, they are open and honest and beseeching. "So, what time can I pick you up?"
Your title character, Winter, is very independent. And for lack of a better term, stubborn.
Yes.
And I noticed in Megan Erickson's Make It Count, her female protagonist also tried to do everything on her own. She was very independent. She pushed guys away.
I tend to write very strong heroines who are independent and who don't need a guy who would maybe like to have one, but who don't need it. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of my MO is definitely strong heroines. Whether that's, you know, par for the course in the whole genre, I wouldn't necessarily say that.
And I'm not saying it's a bad thing either. I think it's great. And you know, we need more Katniss Everdeens and Winters, and it's something positive. I wasn't sure if this was something common in all new adult literature. I haven't read a lot of new adult literature.
I'm trying to think back to all that I've read. I guess I wouldn't say it's common, but you know, there's so much of it out now.
Right.
And I totally agree with you. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I know that, Winter's personality, she's definitely the kind of heroine where you either love her or you hate her. Mm-hmm. And I know that, she will probably rub a lot of people the wrong way, but that's how she is. That's the kind of life that she's led.
I spent most of my time reading the book, yelling at both her and Cade saying, get your act together. Open up, both of you.
Yeah, I get that. I get that a lot. I spent the majority of the book yelling at Winter, like, what are you doing? You're not supposed to do this. You're supposed to move forward. You're not supposed to move backwards.
If it hadn't been so emotional and sad at certain points, it almost would have been like a comedy of errors, because there was, right, you know, everything, yeah, that could have gone wrong did up until the end. And so it was a very emotional ride to read through the book and see these two people who obviously love each other, but, you know, one is very unwilling to admit it, and the other one is trying to pull her out into the open.
Right.
And your book is written in the first-person present tense format.
Yes.
Was there a reason you chose that over first-person past or third-person?
No, when I am starting the process of plotting a story, the characters speak to me, and they come to me in random odd times, and I hear their voice. And sometimes it's in third person past. My adult romances are all third person past. Sometimes it's in first present, as Cage and Winter was. Winter spoke to me in first present, so that's how I started writing it. Captive and Exposed, which are a different series, new adult as well, but those are first past, just because that's how I heard it. So I just write however they speak to me first. There's never an agenda or anything.
I do find that I'm not a huge fan of first person present normally, but it does pull you into the story in a more immediate way, especially, yeah, with new adult, because the characters are youthful, the actions are very much right now, living in the moment. It does pull you into the narrative a little more than I think a third person past or even a first person past would.
Right. Yes. It's very, visceral when you read it. That's why when I was writing it, I was the characters. It was very easy to become them because there was no distancing. You know, it was, I am doing this.
So your book has several sex scenes and they're very sexy, and I'd say they border on erotica the way they're written. I'm going to bring it back to Make It Count. And those sex scenes, while also sexy, are pretty tame in comparison. And, you know, is there a line that you felt you had to straddle when you were writing these scenes to make sure you didn't cross it and bring the book into something, into an erotica territory? Or I'm just wondering what was going through your mind when you were writing these scenes?
No, I didn't try to straddle a line. I didn't try to do anything. I've just always written very sexy sex scenes. I don't know how to write anything else. I don't know how to write fade to blacks. They're my nemesis. I hate them. So I never do those. And I mean, when I'm reading romance, I want to read the romance. You know, I don't read it for vague scenes. I want all the good stuff. So that's how I write it. And yes, I mean, I would say that it very much so borders on erotic romance as far as, you know, the sex scenes in it. It's not erotic romance because the sex, while it plays a large role in their relationship, it's not the entirety of their relationship.
Right.
If I took out the sex scenes, the book would still progress. There would be, you know, I would have to insert a few other places because a lot of, especially Winter's growth, happened during the sex scenes. I'm thinking of the shower specifically, but I could still make the book work without that in it. So they're not, you know, it's not an erotic romance, but the scenes are definitely erotic.
Right. And I noticed they aren't central to the narrative in, you know, they're not the main focus of the narrative. Although if you did pull them out, you'd have to wonder, why aren't these people having sex?
Right.
But they're not the focus. And so it's, you know, it doesn't pull you out of the story when you're reading it. But it did strike me when I read it that, wow, she's getting into details here. So
I don't do flowery. I just did a post on euphemisms and kudos and heartbreakers.
Euphemisms? I don't know the meaning of the word.
It was sort of it was intended to be funny, but there are a lot of, I actually just read a book the other day that talked about a honeypot. I'll let you take what you will from that.
You know, I'd rather have the blunt narrative. Right? I'd rather just have you name the parts at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. So yes, that's always been my preference too. I don't like, you know, the other stuff. And the sex scenes that I do have in the book, always in all of my books, are there for a reason. They're, you know, it's purposeful in the book for them to do it. They're not just, you know, horny and getting it on. They, you know, they move the plot forward, each and every one of them.
So New Adult is fairly new. And it seems like everyone, especially those who don't actually write it, have their own definition of what new adult is. So to you, what is new adult literature?
To me, it's very easily defined. It's characters aged 18 to 25 who are going through the life challenges of people who are 18 to 25. And that's it. You know, it's not sex FYA. If anything, I think it straddles the line between adult romance, or I guess not necessarily romance. I know that the genre mostly is now, you know, filled with contemporary romance, but it is expanding to include other niches, I guess. You know, there's paranormal coming up, and historical is always, from what I've heard, I don't read historical, so I don't know for sure, but I know that, I think that a lot of their heroines are younger, you know, in the age of new adult. So that gets tricky, where there's new adult historical, or is it just historical? At each stage in our lives, we deal with different challenges, and new adult faces a lot of the first times, you know, whereas young adult is more of, I don't know, sweet first, what am I going to do, you know, after this happens? Whereas adult is maybe not first, you know, maybe second careers or second marriages, or you know, they're established in their lives. And new adult is all that new stuff, new career, new loves. Maybe they're switching from maybe a very small high school to a very large college, finding friends and sort of traversing that, all those different sort of paths.
I feel like it has to be more than just the age thing, because if that were the case, then Catcher in the Rye would be a young adult, because Holden Caulfield's 18 when he's, or 17 when he's in the book. So, you know, if that were the only criteria, then a lot of young adult books that we would consider classic literature, or a lot of classic literature that we consider classic literature, would fall under the young adult or the new adult category. But what you said just now about first careers, new loves, finding yourself, I feel like that's where the new adult genre comes in. It's not just about they're 18 to 25, but they're exploring this brand new facet of their lives.
Right, definitely. And I mean, you can't say, see, it's one, you can't have one without the other. You can't, I mean, you might have a 28-year-old who's been, I don't know, in a convent and is just now getting out. That would not be a new adult, even though he or she, I guess, might, you know, still be going through the stuff of a 19-year-old. But at the same time, just because your characters are 18 to 24, if you don't have a story, you don't have a story, whether it's new adult or not. So it has to be engaging while still being within that age bracket, while dealing with issues of that age bracket. I feel like that's the, you know, that's how it is in any category.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, I feel like there has to be some line there drawn to separate the adult from the young adult from the new adult, in more than just the age ranges. There's definitely with themes that are covered, and, you know, as you said, you know, 28 years old getting out of the convent, not a new adult, but they might still be discovering themselves right out of that situation.
Right. I think it's just sort of, it's not something that you can define. Like, you can't just say, okay, this fits into this box. That's not how literature is. I think it's a line that the author, if they're self-publishing, or the editor or publishing group, needs to focus on. I have my critique partner has a book coming out, and it's technically new adult, but I think that they're pushing it as contemporary romance. just because of maybe the themes that it deals with and that sort of thing. So I think it's definitely a, you know, that's something that, that everyone else would need to sort of put their input on to see where it would best fit, you know, who is going to be the reader for this and, you know, what are the company, you know, what's the company of this book? What other books are like it?
Right. How have readers responded to Caged in Winter?
Very awesomely, I guess, as far as I know. I try not to read reviews, so I stay away from those. But I've had lots of really nice messages.
And I know you get photos of the book on shelves all the time.
Yes, that makes me so happy. It makes me ridiculously happy when people send those. So yeah, I think so far they've liked them, and people have really, you know, accepted Winter with open arms, which is what I was most worried about.
What made you write this story?
It was a song. That's how I was inspired. A song called You Set Me Free. I've told this story a million times, so I'm sorry to anyone who's listened or saw my Q&As everywhere. But it was a song on American Idol. Angela Miller was coming through. It was the final, I don't want to say final elimination, but they were narrowing it down, and they had to sing whatever song they wanted. She sang an original song set to piano, and it was called You Set Me Free. And, you know, I just, the song was amazing. Still gives me chills every time I listen to it. But I was on Twitter, of course, and I was talking with Christina, who's now my plot whisperer. And, you know, I said, this song is amazing. I should write a book to it. And she agreed. And, you know, I just sort of let it drop. And I was trying to figure out, you know, how I could work that into a story. And I was automatically thinking adult, because that's all I'd written before. And Christina came back with, you should make this new adult. And Winter was born. You know, that song is Winter. So she came to life. And once I have one character, I set out to find the absolute worst match for that character. And that's how the other one was born.
Where did the chef part of it come in? So Kate is a student, actually, when yes. We first meet him. He hasn't graduated yet, but he's on the verge of graduation. And he's this very well-educated chef, makes these great meals, and he's gunning for his degree when he meets Winter. Where did that come from?
I don't know, actually. I had this asked before, and I texted my friend, and I said, hey, do you remember why I decided to make him a chef? And she said, I think it was just because we thought it'd be hot. And well, yeah, I could see that. So yeah, I think it's just, I thought it'd be a sort of a sexy career for this bigger than life, overprotective, overbearing kind of guy to have this softer side, I guess.
Did you know a lot about cooking when you wrote the book, or did you have to consult people?
I mean, I've always cooked, you know, I've always done that, cooked and baked and that kind of stuff. But the stuff that was in this book, I had a wonderful chef, Chef Amy, who actually went to the, I based Cade's everything off of Amy's school. So she would send me pictures of workstations, and, you know, I'd text her and say, okay, Cade needs to make dinner for her. What would you make? And she said, well, okay, I'd make this. And then she'd tell me the steps that he would need to make it, so that I could, you know, incorporate that to make it a little bit more authentic. And a lot of it was drawn from my personal, I guess, experiences watching reality shows. I know that's horrible to say, but, you know, you watch Chopped, or you watch, you know, some of these other, can't remember the name of it, but they were going through culinary school. But I watched that and sort of got the feel of, you know, the world. And then I had Amy read through it and make sure that this book about a chef sounded like a book about a chef. And, you know, I didn't use anything incorrectly, and I used the proper terms on everything. And so that was it. So I had a lot of help in that.
I'm going to spin the conversation around, and I'm going to ask you about the process and everything. What was the publication process like for you? So from the time you started writing up until publication.
It was a whirlwind. I started writing this in June 2013, June 1st for Juno. I did it. I completed fast drafting July 2nd. I edited and sent off to betas and CPs and incorporated their feedback. And then I pitched it at RWA the third week in July. I got two requests from an editor and an agent. I decided not to send it to the editor because that wasn't the path that I wanted to go on. I'd already published with Karina, so I had already gone the ebook route, and I thought that if any book was going to get me an agent, it was going to be this one. So I really wanted to pursue that. So when I got back from RWA, I sent it off to that requesting agent, and then I sent it off to about 24 others. I heard back from the original requesting agent who wanted a revise and resubmit. She was very, very nice and would be a great agent to work with, but I didn't agree with her suggestions. So I sat on it for a while and thought, well, I'm just going to see what other information or what other interests I get in it. So that was the first part of August that I sent that to her. And I think towards the middle to the end of August, I think I sent out the rest of them. I'm overlapping. She called somewhere in between there too, after I'd already sent them out. And then I got my first offer of rep on September 11th. And before the end of that week, I had three others. So I had four offers to consider from amazing agents. They were all my A-list, and they were all, I would have been lucky to work with any one of them. But when I spoke to Mandy Hubbard, it just clicked. So she became my agent around the 18th of September. She had very, very few edits that she wanted me to do. I got them done in about 2 weeks, and she sent it off to publishers. We went on submission, I want to say right around October 1st. We got our first offer on Halloween.
That's terrific. Fast.
So, yes. When I say whirlwind, it was a whirlwind. So I wrote the first word for Cajun Winter June 1st, and I got an offer October 31st.
And none of the other agents, none of the four that had offered representation had R&Rs?
No, none of those other four. I had one other R&R from another agent, but hers was very, very vague. She sort of said, you know, I really like this book. You know, I love it, but I don't think it's catchy enough for me to be able to sell it as your debut. So unless I figured out a way to weave in a bigger hook, it wouldn't have worked for her. The other agents, every one of them wanted something slightly different done, but it was all very, very minimal as far as changes.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, it was exciting and fun and scary.
And how has it been since the book's been out?
It's been a whirlwind again. It came out 2 weeks ago, not quite 2 weeks ago. But I'm also knee-deep in working with three other books right now. So I didn't really get a moment to sort of bask in publication day, unfortunately. But it's been, I don't know, the same, I guess.
So this wasn't the first book you had written, right?
Right. Well, this was the first full-length novel I'd written.
Oh, wow. Okay.
My other two, Plus One and Season of Second Chances, are both novellas with Karina Press. So they're, shorter, I think mid-20s to upper 20s, I guess. So this was the first full-length novel I'd fully completed, I think. I've got another one that I completed, and I can't remember if I overlapped, like if I put that one on pause and then wrote Cajun Winter and then I went back to it, or if I had finished that before. It gets jumbled in my mind, all these books, so.
Well, it's understandable, especially if you've got three on your plate right now that you're trying to wrap up.
Yeah, it was kind of a nightmare because Caged was coming out, and I got copy edits for Captive. I got content edits for Tessa Ever After, and I was drafting Exposed. So it's been a hellish month.
Tessa Ever After is the sequel to Yes. Caged in Winter, right? And yep. Tessa is Cade's sister.
Right.
And can you tell us anything about that book?
So that book follows, as you said, Tessa, Cade's sister, and Jason, Cade's best friend. It's after Cade's left, Cade and Winter are gone, and Tessa's there by herself, sort of fumbling, and Jason steps in to help because, you know, he's a good best friend, but also because he's sort of had the feelings. You get to see him. Haley's in this a lot more, which is Tessa's daughter, and you get to see them interact. I know you got that a little bit in Cage and Winter with Cade, but not to the extent of this. So Tessa and Haley both definitely soften his rough edges.
Was writing your primary goal in life, or were you working at other things before you became a writer?
No, it wasn't my primary goal. I've never really had a primary goal, I guess. I was a photographer for 10 years. I've written always when I was younger. You know, I would write sappy poems. I actually found a smutty story I wrote when I was about 14.
Ooh.
That I don't remember writing. And it was funny to read it. But no, yeah, I wrote. And then I wrote in high school. I was on the literary magazine and did that kind of stuff. But it was, you know, poetry and sort of shorts, I guess. And then I didn't write and I didn't read and I didn't do anything in my early 20s. And then in my late 20s, it sort of sparked up again. And I started.
What was the spark in your late 20s that made you say, I want to do this now? This is what I want to do.
Oh, Harry, you're going to disown me when I tell you this.
Is it a reality show?
Here I was. So here I was, 5 months pregnant. And I was flying to Texas to visit a group of girlfriends. And a couple of them had just read Twilight.
And they This went. Has been covered with Harry Marks.
I knew it.
No, it's fine.
And they were going on and on about this and about Edward. And I was like, who would name their hero Edward? That's the worst name in the history of the world. How can you have a crush on someone named Edward? No. Well, I was packing for this trip and I was at Target, as one does. And I was getting all this, you know, stuff. And I saw Twilight there. And it was like, I guess I can get this instead of four magazines. It's a lot cheaper. So I grabbed it. And I didn't start reading it on the way because I read magazines because I was not at all interested in it. And I started on the way back and I just got sucked into it. Like, I don't know what it is. I can't read it again. I've tried and I can't catch that spark still with it. But something about it spoke to me at that time and I read it. I inhaled it. I inhaled the rest of the books too. In fact, I read it, I finished it, and I opened it to the first page again. That's how much I love that book. And I have done that, I think, with maybe three books my whole life. So I know you're disowning me. Your silence is weighted.
You know, I know several people who are very snobby about the books they read and about the books other people read. And I have no issue with what you want to read. I read Dan Brown novels and they're terrible and they're, you know, they're not high literature, but it's the same way I can watch an Expendables movie, or I got really excited that they're making a sequel to Olympus Has Fallen, the movie with Gerard Butler about the White House being taken.
Right.
I love those movies. It's like Die Hard in the White House. And so, you know, if you want to read Twilight or 50 Shades of Grey or anything, you know, anything that gets you to read, I don't care. Do whatever makes you happy. Even if I don't like it, I'm not going to sit here and judge anyone else for reading something they like.
Right. That's my view too on it. And I've actually heard a lot. Well, tons of my friends really got the spark of reading back after they read this. Like, you know, I was a huge reader through high school, but I read Stephen King and I read Dean Koontz and I was reading adult stuff. And then I started Twilight. And after I was done getting sucked into the world of fanfic, then I just became ravenous for books. And I started writing. I wrote fanfic first. I got the idea for Plus One. Plus One was my first foray into original fiction. For a while, you know, I was reading hundreds of books in a year, and they were all romance books. And I would say, I really need to branch out and read something else, maybe women's fiction or a classic once in a while or something like that. And I would give myself a goal to do it, and I just was never excited about reading them. And I thought, why am I doing this to myself? I read for fun. I read for enjoyment. I enjoy these books, so I'm going to read them. You know, if I ever get the itch to read a classic, if I ever get the itch to read The Great Gatsby, I'll read it. But right now, I would rather read this smutty Motorcycle Club book that I've got on my phone. So that's what I read.
But you don't feel like you're ODing on the romance? You write it, you read it, you don't feel that you need to spice it up with something different?
No, mm-mm, never. I mean, I do read some of the young adult books that I read are different, but they all have romance in them. That's why I read books, is for the romance. So if there's not a romantic element, I'm not interested. I'm just not. I've tried. And that's not to say that that's how it will always be, because like I said, you know, I used to read horror novels, but that's how it is right now. That's what I like.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. And I don't OD on it, because usually while I'm drafting, I'm not allowed to read original fiction. While I'm drafting, I read fanfic so that I don't get wrapped up, because it's like your favorite sweater that you put on. You know the characters, you know basically what's going to happen. You don't have to think. It's like watching a Friends rerun. You know, it's just, it's static, I guess, in the background.
That's interesting, because when I write, when I'm drafting, I'm still reading. Like, I blew through a couple of books while I was drafting my last novel. I can't not read when I'm writing, but I find it interesting that you read fan fiction when you're writing.
But we draft very differently. You draft basically a page a day, let's say, because you said it takes you about a year to draft a book. Is that right?
Yeah, I write for a couple of hours in the morning every day.
I would go crazy too to not be able to read. So absolutely, I would do that. But when I draft, I fast draft. So it's thousands upon thousands of words every single day. So
yeah, I don't know how you do it.
If I'm pulled out of that into original fiction, it's really messes with my characters. Now, I will say with this one, with Exposed, when I was drafting it, I broke my rule and I read these Motorcycle Club. They were novellas, though. They're so far out of the realm of what I write that it had no chance of bleed through. So I wasn't worried about that.
And that's the worry, right? That what you're reading will influence what you're writing.
Yeah. And not only that, but I worry that I'm going to get taken away from my characters and I'm not going to be as present with them because I'm going to be thinking about what these other characters have done. That's why with fanfic, I don't have to think about it because I know them. You know, they're just in the back of my head already, these characters. Like, I couldn't go through and read any kind of fanfic. It's specifically Twilight fanfic because that's what I've always read. So I know that those characters. So I couldn't go and read Harry Potter fanfic, if that makes sense, because I don't know those characters. To me, it would be like reading original fiction, because those characters would all still need to be built up in my mind. And I can't go back and reread old favorites either because I'm not as immersed in them as I would be. You know what I mean? Like there's still something new. Like one of my favorites, favorite young adults is Anna and the French Kiss. I've read it several times. I love the characters. I love the book, but it's not as familiar to me as it's not an old t-shirt. You know, it's maybe one of my favorite sweaters that I only wear once or twice a season. You see what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. Moving forward, once you finish these next three books, what is your ultimate goal with your career? What do you hope to do? Do you want to win a Pulitzer? Do you want to conquer the world? What do you hope to do in the future?
Yes, well, I plan to overtake the world. World domination.
We'll find you an incompetent mouse to join your crusade.
Yes. I'm horrible at this. I really have no hard and fast goals because everything happens so quickly. I mean, my goal was to get an agent, and then my goal was to get a publishing deal, a print deal, and that happened so quickly that, you know, I haven't really thought far enough ahead. But now that I just turned in edits for Tessa on Friday night at 11:30. They were due Friday, by the way.
Nice.
And yes, I will turn in Exposed next week or this coming week or when this posts last week. And then I don't have anything pressing. So I plan to sit and just sort of have a meeting with my agent and find out, you know, where I want to go from here and what I want to do and what I want to write. But I mean, I foresee writing for a long time. I would love to hit, you know, some of the lists, New York Times or USA Today, but I won't weigh my career on any of those. I'm happy with where I am. I'm happy with my books. I'm happy that I've got, you know, a print deal. I'm happy with my agent. So I'm happy.
Do you worry that if you, so once the three ahead of you are done, do you worry that if you don't keep moving forward, that you might fall behind or that people would forget? Or because I know with a lot of self-publishers that, you know, they're churning out books sometimes once a month because they need to keep their numbers up. Do you worry about doing anything like that?
Yes, I'm already worried about that. I already feel like I'm behind.
Hmm.
Yes, I do. I feel like I should already have something out on submission, you know, something ready to send. And my agent assures me, no, you do not need to have anything. You're fine. You know, your piece is fine. And I feel like I didn't even, you know, like you said, there are people who are putting out a book a month. And this wasn't a slow publishing. I mean, 4 books in a year, that's a lot. But I feel behind still. But this about killed me. You know, up until this last month, it was okay. I was okay with everything. But this last month was very, very difficult. So I don't know how I would, you know, balance that in the future as far as how many I would have out and how quickly I would get them out. But we'll see. I do want to, I mean, I plan to, as soon as I get this done, I plan to, like I said, sit down, call Mandy, have a talk with her and see where we want to go, because I have several ideas floating around in my head and I just don't know which we need to work on first.
Where can people find you?
Twitter, most likely. That's where I spend 23 out of 24 hours in a day. Mm-hmm. I'm at writeasrain_, and that's WRITE, writeasrain. My website is brightonwalsh.com. I am on Facebook as Brighton Walsh Writes, I believe. I just started up a reader group on there called Brighton's Brigade, and it's very low key. And right now I'm just sort of posting teasers. I've posted lots of teasers to Tessa Ever After and pictures of inspiration. You might not be interested in that group. I'm on Instagram too, as writeasrain_, same as my Twitter. I'm on Pinterest.
You are everywhere.
I am everywhere, but Twitter is my comfy sofa. That's where I like to be.
This has been Covered with Brighton Walsh, author of Caged in Winter, available now from the Berkeley Publishing Group. Brighton, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much.
And don't forget, don't judge a book until it's covered.